Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book. I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello everyone.
And we're back from holiday again. Did you have a nice holiday?
Absolutely.
2 weeks in Slovenia.
Yes, very nice. Just recommend this country. It's what we've seen. Really great.
Some parts are busy. A lot of it, when you get away from the tourist stuff, is not busy at all,
no.
Which is very nice.
And the nature is just breathtakingly beautiful.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful city. Yeah. Country.
Ljubljana as well.
Although we did look it up, as a country, it's got fewer people in Berlin, where we live.
Berlin and Brandenburg together.
It's like, smaller than Brandenburg and has fewer people in than Berlin.
Yes.
So either way, on the trip, we recorded two podcasts in the hotel room. Hopefully people are now enjoying this better sound quality than we had using our little vlogging microphones that we use for video recording stuff.
Yeah.
But also I released another podcast, which is the 550 special episode, where we went through the 52 must read science fiction books.
Really good.
Yeah. And
very
I posted,
long list.
So yes, if you want to see that list, you actually just click on, go on your computer, sfbrp.com, and then you can click on episodes lists. And you can see the list of all 550 episodes that we've done so far. Or if you click on, there's another link at the top of the page or in the menu of the page. Depending on, if you resize on your phone, there's like a little, you know, 3-bar menu kind of thing. Tap on that. Yep. Click on must reads and you can see the must read science fiction list.
With the link to the podcast that we're recorded.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, like the latest, here it is here, must reads and stuff like that. So it says what the must read science fiction is. Where is the best place to start for new readers of science fiction? Which books are the best examples of science fiction available to read today? Which old books stand the test of time? And which new books will we still be thinking about in decades to come?
Yeah.
That last question, which old books stand the test of time? Kind of something that I'm going to answer today, because as we go down this way, there's lots of different things here. One of the sections or one of the little linked topics thing was military science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And in military science fiction is like Starship Troopers and some other bits and pieces. Down at the bottom, actually, in the page, I list some of those books that I was like, hey, we should get to some of these books and reread them to see if they should fit on the list.
Yeah.
Spoilers, The Left Hand of Darkness, which is a book that I read after we recorded this book, you know, because I actually started it just at the same time. We recorded the podcast 549 before, no, we
after.
Recorded it. We recorded it after episode 550, but posted it beforehand because we wanted to do the 550 before we went away on holiday. And, you know, I had to catch up with some Ursula K. Le Guin books and stuff like that. But that book, 1969 holds up to today.
Yes.
The next book, or the maybe not the next book we talk about on the podcast, but the book that you're currently reading, Maria
Doria
Russell, The Sparrow. You're reading that. What do you think? Good book?
I'm really enjoying it so far.
In the 1990s, stands the test of time.
Yeah.
But there was a whole decade. There's a whole decade that went by where we were talking about 1970s. Zero books in the must-read science fiction list from the 1970s.
Yeah,
we're like,
it's quite telling, isn't
what
it?
What was going on in the 1970s? Like, what are the books that were there? So down at the bottom...
page for the must-read...
Of the must-reads list, I put down some books which... weren't including the masterworks, but I'd have to reread to see if the books hold up or not.
So this is like a living list. This list could be edited.
It could be
over
added
time.
To. Again, I'm thinking like maybe one or two books per year.
Okay.
We could add to the must read science fiction list.
Sounds good to me.
And probably not brand new books.
Yeah.
Because again, I have to think. You know, do I even remember it? You know, a few years later, like I say that China Mountain Zhang, zero memories of even reading that book. But apparently, I gave it 4.5 stars. I don't know how I managed to do this.
Yeah,
or 4 stars. So one of them was Gateway by Frederick Pohl. I think that was a 1970s book. But the one I decided to check out mostly because it's on the Audible Free Library as an audiobook version,
mm-hmm.
Was Joe Haldeman, The Forever War. And I said, in brackets, need to check 1970s books for dated content that would kill my enjoyment of the book.
Yeah.
And
so you did re-listen to it.
Well, here's the thing. I reviewed this book on the Science Fiction Book Review podcast before.
Oh, when?
In 2008.
Oh, very
so,
early on.
And I gave it 4 stars. So I was like, well, I'm not going to re-listen to old podcasts because, like I say, I don't really... It's not like I don't like early episodes of the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, but, like, I'm just a different person now, living in a different world with a different job, different... You know, everything's different about it. So I don't really care what 2008 Luke thought about a novel.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, Future Luke.
You have changed.
Future Luke is different from Hello Future Luke, How Is Life in 2020 is a song that I wrote in 2010, like acknowledging the fact that I'm going to be a different person in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
And 2008 is longer than 10 years ago now.
Very much.
So anyway, let me bring up my notes here about this. So is a book from the 1970s. Could this book make it onto the science fiction must reads list? So it has to hold up as a good example of the ideas that it contains. So even if it's the original version of it, it can't feel, or put it this way, a question you've got to ask is, does it feel cliched now? Because it's been copied so many times, it's not the fault of the original book, but some books just don't hold up.
Yeah.
But some of them really do hold up.
Yeah.
And then also the other question I put down is, how 1970s is it? Like, you know, how dated is it? How,
okay.
You know,
so is this an early 70s book or late
1974, 70s? I think.
Okay, so right
well,
in
actually,
the middle.
I've got the Wikipedia page here. So it's, from 1974. And then it won the Nebula Award in 1975, the Locus Award, and the Hugo Award. So this is the Hugula and Locus Award winning book that we're looking at here.
And so the author, where's he from?
Joe Haldeman, don't really care, American guy.
Okay.
He studied physics and he was a Vietnam War veteran. And he came back and he wrote this book as this is like a science fictional retelling of what it feels like to be a soldier, a conscripted soldier who's a physicist, like he's a physicist in the war. And the book is about someone called William Mandela. And Mandela, it sounds a bit like, Haldeman. So it's like Haldeman. So it's like, it's kind of an anagram. It even says it in the Wikipedia page.
Okay.
Kind of an anagram of his own name. A physicist, conscripted soldier. So it didn't volunteer to be a soldier, but here he is anyway.
Okay.
And so the idea is that the thing's called... collapsars, which are like black holes, pretty much black holes, are spinning. And as you approach them, they kind of slingshot you really, really fast. And you go in and you come out perfectly and you line up with another black hole somewhere else. And it's almost instantaneous travel between black holes. So kind of wormhole technology. But it's kind of, weirdly enough, it's explained. Like nowadays, you could just say, oh yeah, we're slingshotting around black holes as you're using black holes as wormholes to get around. And you're like, great, don't need to explain it. But here, we kind of like, no, I'm a physicist. I'm explaining all of this.
You have to explain the idea of black holes. And
yeah,
how
it feels,
it works.
But they're not called black holes; they're called collapsars. But you know, Wikipedia says they're pretty much collapsars. So
black holes.
So the humans exploring the galaxy using these collapsars.
Yeah.
Collapsar like wormhole-y kind of things.
Yeah.
And they find some aliens. That the aliens, they realize these aliens have been attacking the ships out in the galaxy. And they're like, well, they're attacking us. We're going to attack them to protect our ships.
Mm-hmm.
Kickstarts a needless war, senseless war with the Taurans. It's funny because they're actually in the audiobook. It says that they're from the planet Aldebaran or Aldebaran with a different pronunciation.
Oh, what's the pronunciation
this
time?
But then the text of the book itself said, yeah, but it turns out Aldebaranians was too difficult to pronounce. So we just called them Taurans and that's who we are. And I'm like, oh, that's quite funny because we're just discussing Aldebaran or Aldebaran, like depending on... where did you hear the word? Like, where did you hear it said for the first time?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Aldebaran.
Funny.
So it's that, and the idea being that as he's conscripted, gets some training sequences, and then every time he gets posted, he goes further and further away from Earth. And as you come back from Earth, more time has passed because it's all about like the, you know, you go close to the speed of light.
Yeah.
Time goes slowly for you, but time. As you accelerate or whatever it works more time is passing on Earth.
Yes.
So when he comes back, it's a fun analogy, or say fun, an interesting analogy for like people who go away to war, come back home, and everything's changed.
Yeah.
It feels like, oh, society has moved on in the time that I was in the Vietnam War, or I'd gone off to war, come back.
Of course.
And my hometown is different, and this is different, and that
and
is
the people
different.
Are different. Of course.
Yeah. People are different. And so each time he comes back to Earth or sometimes some other places, he, you know, he's only 6 months older or whatever, or 2 years older.
Of course.
Like 20 years has passed, and then 50 years has passed, and then 200 years has passed, and then 500 years has passed, and then 1,000, you know, like, so each time he comes back more and more time. So we get that kind of interesting thing that every time he goes further and further out into the world to another, like, black rock with no sunlight where they've got to fight the bugs, come back and the world has changed even more.
Okay.
All of this stuff is interesting. And the central idea, which I find fantastic, is that depending on when the enemy has set off and when you have set off, you could be in their, you could be someone from their future or from their past.
Right.
And I really like this idea. And this is the idea that I had in my brain. Because, again, I've read this book before. I read it for the first time in 2008.
Yeah.
You know, reviewed it on the podcast. And I remember all of this stuff really well. And I always really enjoyed the ideas that, you know, you don't know if the person that, like, you don't know if the enemy is from your future or past. So you're going to turn up and you don't know if your weapons are going to be more advanced than them or their weapons are going to be more advanced than yours.
Yes.
And I really like that idea. That is said in the book. But actually, as I read through this book, I was like, oh, that's not actually anything, like, that doesn't, nothing, none of that means anything, you know, because in the book, like, everything into the future is pretty much exactly the same as it is now, except some social stuff changes, which I'll get into later.
Mm-hmm.
But the war tactic seems to stay the same. The language stays the same. You know, just everything stays the same, even though he's saying, oh, yeah, we don't know if they're going to have bigger or better weapons, because the weapons are just like generic, you know, shields and guns and lasers and whatever. It's all like, yeah, because it's all science fictional. So I don't know if something is more or less advanced than what we had last time.
Yes. I'm just having one tiny question here because it wasn't quite made, you didn't make quite so clear. So the character in the book,
William Mandela
is also a physicist.
Yeah, he was so here's the setup. Everyone.
No, that doesn't answer my question. So the author also was a physicist and got conscripted into war.
Yeah.
And here the main character, basically everything is the same. The main character is also a physicist and has to go to war.
You say everything is the same, but I know so little about the main character because he's barely fleshed out. Everything is told in the first person. It's all like, I did this, I did that, I did this. And you just got to infer for a lot of it, like, why is his name Mandela and what's it going on like this? So, but it did really feel like this book was taking a long time.
Okay.
Like a really long time. I put it here, 3 hours into a 9-hour audiobook before it feels like the first new or interesting idea is introduced.
Okay.
Now, I think this comes from me having read it before.
Yeah.
And me going, this is taking a long time. But, you know, it got there in the end. I was like, oh, yes. But then I was like, oh, I remember this being more impactful the last time. And I think what the big issue is that the main character is like super passive because he's a pacifist. But he's conscripted because it's like they pick everyone who's got, like, they only pick people to fight if their IQ is over 150 or whatever it is like
okay.
that. So it's only geniuses only, people who are fine specimens, they bring them up because they're going to be transporting them like across the galaxy or like to other stars. So they don't want to waste their time with idiots. So it's really intelligent people. But he's such a, like, doesn't do anything. He's just like passive. And he just gets promoted because he's, by often dumb luck, the one to survive. He's sort of like, all right, now you're a lieutenant and now you're a general and now you're a corporal. I don't know which
He goes up the ranks.
He goes up the ranks. And I'm like, but you don't see it. And the only time he ever learns how to do something is that he gets like this hypno training, you know. So can't even think. Oh, well, I guess The Matrix, where he goes, I know Kung Fu. And you don't see him having learnt Kung Fu. He just opens his eyes and then you see a cool Kung Fu action sequence.
Yeah.
In this, it's just like mentioned that, oh, yeah, and then I went into training and it took 2 weeks and I was hypno-trained for all this time and then I came out and then I knew everything I needed to know about the current state of technology. But
Handy.
Yeah, it's like handy, but it's like a very clear, like a very easy way of writing someone becoming an expert and like learning how to be a leader.
Yeah, don't show the process, just show the outcome.
It's like the opposite of show, don't tell. It's just like he's now been told how to be good at that and how to be good at fighting, and it gets him out of trouble and stuff. So at one point there's like he's a leader, like he's one of the commanders, and someone does something bad and they're like, well, normally the punishment would be, you know, corporal punishment or capital punishment or whichever way it is, you know, when martial law, that person needs to be killed. But he's like, umming and ahhing and umming. And then the decision's like taken out of his hands. Again, I don't need to give it away, but it's sort of like someone else, like, obviously just kills the guy for him because they're like, well, you're not doing anything. So it's weird that as a, like, a protest against the, like, how pointless war is, we get a character who's, like, really weak and not very good. And this is off the back of the last book we talked about, or one of the previous books that we talked about, which is The Eye of the Heron by Ursula K. Le Guin.
Yeah.
And that was about, like, you know, non... how to say it, like being a pacifist, you know, there's a whole group of pacifists that went on an anti-war march and then got bundled off to another city. That was written the same year as that, this book. This is also from 1974.
Okay. I mean, it's quite a big connection to the Vietnam War kind of stuff
and
that's
also
going on, right?
The same kind of thing, which is actually in this book, it makes this thing, it gives like this snide remarks about the Spanish Civil War and the anarchists there, with the idea being that they always talk through all of the orders. Mm. And anybody who is given orders, they can ask questions about them and will only carry out the orders if they agree that the orders make sense and that it's worth whatever they do.
Yeah.
And it says in this book, it's sort of like, you know, it's like, yeah, and they lost the war, but they, you know, they had a much better time than the other guys, you know, like the other guys, the communists or whoever it was in the Spanish Civil War.
Okay.
Either way, it's fun that these two books, both written in like 1974 and 1975, and kind of sometimes commenting on the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
They're both
but in quite different ways.
Well, no, in some ways, yes, but this is also a book which isn't glorifying war, but it means that you're just putting up with someone who is meant to be a genius, but is also doesn't want to be involved, is a bad leader, but is trained to be a good leader, but then we never really see him being a good leader. Like, he loses respects of the troops and they think that he doesn't like it, and for various reasons, he just misreads the room. So it's just weird to read someone who's like incompetent and managed to live through the forever war, you know, this 1,000-year war, just by luck and dumb chance, you know.
Okay.
And while it is an interesting statement about the futility of war and how difficult it is to be a, you know, a conscripted soldier and then but be also try and be a conscientious objector or whatever's going on there, it makes for a weak story and a weak character.
Okay.
But it's fine because it's fine. Let me bring up here. We asked about the who he was. So so it's weird. So it gets to like the pacing is all over this book. Like he gets like an hour before the end, and it feels like the like 9-hour audiobook. And now the story seems to be kicking off, like really kicking off. And then right at the end, it's going, ah, I remember back when we used to practice this thing. And then he tells a bit of his original early training. This is like an hour before the end. And then like 45 minutes before the end, he's sort of like, and now I'll explain why my name is William Mandela. Well, my mother was a hippie, you know. And I was like, was she earlier on in the book? She wasn't a hippie. You know, the parents were hippies and they picked their name and it was like a Mandela, you know, the prayer
mandala
disc. Mandala, yeah, but the point is the story is about the person at the registry office to register the birth or to register the change of name. They changed their name when they got married, wrote it down wrong and just put Mandela, like as in like Nelson Mandela, I get, or wherever where it gets the name from. But I'm like, oh, so you're explaining away the clumsy, like not quite anagram of your second name, Haldeman. So it's Handemandel, you know, like you can get there, but but that's written like right near the end of the book. And I'm like, this is all mixed up and it's contradictory.
Anything to do with the story?
Not really, anyway. So the only time when he's actually makes any decisions is where he goes back to Earth at one point, and Earth is so bad that he re-enlists in the army, even though you're definitely going to die in the army. He gives the calculations like you're so likely to die because you have to do 10 years worth of subjective service.
Yeah.
But you're just going to, like, so few people to survive each battle. So few humans. He says it's like doing a Russian roulette with four bullets in a six-chamber gun, like 10 times in a row, or whatever it's going to be. Like, you know.
Yeah.
And he's all like, we're going to survive. But even knowing that, or that's a possibility, he signs back up for the army. But then when you read what it's like back on Earth, you're like, well, of course you're going to sign up for the army because it's really shit here. It's like really grim. And there's this big section in the middle of the book where he goes back to Earth And it just takes ages. And he goes to New York, and then he goes to Washington, and then he goes out into the country, and there's some battles, and then he like shoots a guy because the guy's gonna rape someone or whatever, you know, like, and he blows people's heads off and all this kind of stuff. And his girlfriend, who is out there, Mary Gay, her family's killed, and like everything. And he's like too homophobic because now his mum's gay or whatever. And he's sort of like, well, everyone around here is turning gay because they're turning the government is promoting homosexuality to curb population growth. Don't ask. I can get into that in a minute. And then it's sort of like, I'm too homophobic to be on Earth, and I keep accidentally killing people. So let's sign up back to the army again. And I'm like, wow.
Okay, what a really disturbed kind of person.
Yeah, and I'm like, why? Like, what? Like, and I was like, So anyway, got to the end of this book, and I was like, I gave this book 4 stars in 2008. And I couldn't remember. I couldn't remember. So
did
just
you
now,
read over all these things?
So just now, I like to say this afternoon, I was like, let me go back and listen to this 2008 episode. It's like episode 20 or whatever it is. In fact, I could probably just look it up here.
Yeah.
What is it? Episode Forever War. That's Forever Peace. So yeah, I reviewed this in June 2008, episode 20 of the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. Okay. I'd not read it before, and I was like, well, I listened back to this podcast, and I was talking about, yeah, and this is after reading some big, long, chunky fantasy books. I'm going to read this book, and I'm talking about it's like a really short book. Yeah, and I got through the book. It's only like 200 and something pages. And I'm like, I don't remember. And then I'm saying things like, yeah, and he gets back to Earth, and then he decides to sign up for the army straight away. And I was like, well, I don't really understand why he just signed up for the army, like just because I guess he couldn't cope with how society had changed, so he just signs back up. And then I got this inkling suspicion. I'm like, this is a different book. And so I typed into Google. No, not typed into Google. Like typed into, well, I started looking at the Wikipedia page and stuff like this. And it says,
read an abridged version.
No, I didn't read an abridged version. I read the original novel version. So it was first published as a series of short stories or series of like novellas in Astounding Magazine or whatever it is. Let me have a look here. So the editions. So it was originally written as a MFA thesis for the Iowa Writers Workshop. It was first published as a serial in Analog Magazine before its publication, book publication, like a single novel, in 1974. Since then, many editions of Forever War have been published. Editions prior to 1991 were abridged for space by the original editor, admitting the middle section, a novella you can, which is titled "You Can Never Go Back." These early paperback editions of, so I realized, oh, the edition that I read in 2008 was from the Another Place bookshop, which was like the mass majority was like, you know, classic
used
books and science fiction book from, you know, all, you know, you've been in there, you've seen this, just like rows and rows and rows in the science fiction cellar of these books. So I was like, oh, Forever War. I picked it off the shelf and I read not the abridged it kind of is an abridged version, but it's four short stories collected together, like fixed up into a novel.
Right.
And then the novella You Can Never Go Back wasn't published in Analog Magazine. It was published in a different magazine.
Right.
And then when it was collected together into a 1991 edition, it restored many expurgated, is that how you pronounce it? Primarily dealing with the changes that befall human civilization over the course of William Mandela's life. Haldeman notes, but alas, not all the changes got in, and the book has some internal contradictions because things left over from the earlier version. And this is what I'm saying. You know what I mentioned before?
Mm-hmm.
That he's saying at the end of the book that his mother was a hippie. But when we meet his mother in the middle of the book, she is the opposite of a hippie. She's like not a hippie at all. Like she's working and she's like doing this like scam about working here and working there. And it's not very good social science fiction about what Earth is going to be like in the year, you know, 2018 or whatever it is when this book, I think he sets off in 1998 or 1997,
yeah.
Comes back in 2019. What's the world like in 2019? This was written in 1974.
Yeah.
And it's not very good.
Mm.
It's more satire. It's more like political satire probably about American politics in the 1970s that I don't entirely understand.
Yeah.
But it just felt out of place. And it took me a while. Like, you know, I found this thing here as well on this Reddit post. Apparently, I read the wrong edition of Forever War? I just finished reading the 1980 copy of the edition. I thought it was pretty solid. But as I was looking at the Wikipedia entry, I saw that the 1991 edition and the 1997 editions restored material that had been cut from the original serial publication. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm just saying as well. Like in 1997, they published a version that Haldeman called the definitive, with everything restored and a less funny color illustration.
Okay.
I don't know this Audible version. I don't know which one of these editions it is, but it's obviously one of these later, longer versions, which has put in a lot of stuff, but there's still contradictions in there. And I think they've updated the language. There's more swearing in this. And I mentioned in this earlier podcast that I recorded in 2008, I was like, and the swearing is funnier.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that they replaced the swear words in it with a funny science fiction swear word. I can't remember what it was, like soy, like soy stuff. Instead of saying shit or bullshit, they say soy meat or whatever it is. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Again, I'm now thinking back to a podcast that I just listened to this afternoon that I didn't make notes about. I read a different edition. So the edition that I gave 4 stars to in 2008... isn't this?
No.
It's like if it was an audiobook, it would be 3 hours shorter.
Yeah. So it would actually, if you would have read literally exactly the same book, you would have an actual same comparison.
Yeah.
But because you didn't read the same
book. I can't read that
book
now. Like it says here, I looked at these things. You see this thing, there's loads of editions. So there's like 100, there's been 133 editions of this book.
Oh,
again, that's
well,
lots
different,
of...
different
lots
languages
of,
as well.
Lots of languages. So let's say like 15... reprintings in various things. You know, you get there's Kindle edition, paper editions, you know, like we talked about on the where we talk about the Golance Masterworks, there'll be versions of that. And I looked at some of them, and the 1976 edition, 218 pages. Mm-hmm. The 2014 edition, which is as far as I can tell, is like the one that was published for Kindle and then used as the basis as the Audible version.
So
it kind
probably
of makes sense.
Like the latest
One of the latest ones.
Yeah.
292. So 218 to 292. That's a big chunk. That's like 30%. That's a novel which is 30% longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so listening to the 2008 Luke talk about this book, he's like, yeah, it could have been more stuff in it, but it's brisk. It gets through it. There's lots of science fiction ideas. Lots of science fiction ideas here, but at least it gets through them quickly and it keeps moving on and it just goes through to the future and every time it comes back. And I said as well, it would be nice to hear about, like, when they come back to Earth, him and Mary Gay, his love interest. Like, why did they both decide to re-enlist again? And that's kind of left open. But when I read it for myself, I'm like, yeah, they just couldn't cope with the modern world anymore. And they're like, well, we know the army. And even though we're probably going to die there, we'll just sign up back together again. And we can continue the life where we knew each other.
Yeah.
And all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But in this version of the book, like this extended version where they can never, with the extra novella in the middle of a novel, it's obvious that you should sign up again because it's like comic, like the world is comically bad.
Okay.
You know, it's like an Idiocracy kind of situation. I realize you've not seen that movie. But it's one of those things where you just go, well, yeah, of course everybody here is stupid and the world is stupid and the economics are stupid. And
so he made it easy for himself to have the reason for them
to... No, it feels like the character... It felt like the character had more agency when that was left out.
Right.
Like when he just comes back and goes, oh, can't cope, and then just moves on. It's like, I understood it. And also, there's this thing, you know, that part about, like, people, like, homosexuality being encouraged to reduce population growth.
Yeah.
In the version that I remember reading in 2008, that doesn't happen in 2019. That happens like 200 years in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt like, or 400 years, that theme was brought up, or that idea was brought up way, way later in the book. So it felt like whole generations have passed rather than he just gets home and his mum's turned gay.
Okay.
You know, there's like a, if you say 400 years in the future to curb population growth, homosexuality has been promoted and, you know, or whatever it is, you can think, yeah, 400 years in the future, we can just imagine a silly world.
Yeah.
But when it's like 1974, and I guess, of course, you know, 1974 to 2019 or wherever it's set in the book.
Yeah.
Like, that's still like, oh yeah, let's just imagine crazy. Let's just go crazy. 50 years in the future, you know, and you think about it that way. You think, oh yeah, 50 years in the future, this
is
good.
It's long time. But is it?
But it does, all of that's to say that it the book is worse for putting in more information that Luke in 2008 wanted. I'm like, now I've read it, I'm like, actually it's worse.
Yeah.
Sometimes the whole book drags.
Sometimes if you feel like, oh, the author left something out, at least it gives you the opportunity to come up with stuff yourself. As soon as the author then puts a definite,
yeah,
you get what the author wants.
Yeah,
sometimes
you're like,
that's not what you want.
He's like, oh yeah, I wonder how did Han Solo get the Millennium Falcon? It's like, just don't watch the movie. It's much better if you don't know.
Yeah, just take the little bits and pieces and put them together in your own head.
Even though I kind of mildly enjoyed the movie Solo, I'm like, guys, you don't have to show us the Kessel Run. Yeah, either way, but this is not this. Because this is all stuff that he wrote in these short stories that were published in different places. But I'm saying that the editor, that Haldeman didn't, you know, the original editor who put this together, I'm like, good job, you put together a book in 1974 for mass market publication that for 20 years people thought should win the Hugo, the Nebula, the Locus.
That book then won, of course, that then won the awards.
The book that won the awards isn't the one that I listened to as an audiobook.
Yeah.
Do you understand about issue with this?
It's huge, actually, this implication.
That was a compressed novel with, of course, weird stuff in it, which is disagreeable 1970s stuff. But at least it was brisk. At least it got through. And I was like, I made a note, like, the Forever War, more like this book is taking forever war, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, it's just taking forever to get back to the war. Hmm. And I realized now, after finishing the book and doing a bit of research, I realized that in the middle of the novel that I thought I was reading, there was just a novel set on Earth about someone coming back from the Vietnam War, not the Vietnam War, in this case, whatever, Aldebaran or wherever they went off to.
Terrans.
Yeah, the Terrans.
So, big message, people, check your editions. Sometimes the older versions can be better. I find it really frustrating then that in the Audible or in the newer editions, they don't have a little pre-disclaimer thing saying like the version or the edition that you're listening to here is the later version or the whatever.
Actually, I just say this is this book was recorded in 1999, this audio book version. It's narrated by George Wilson.
Okay.
And now I realize that it was recorded in 99. I just want to say the world has moved on a lot from 1974 in terms of like what they want to say about homosexuality or whatever that. The world has also moved on a bit from 1999 because at one point this homosexual character turns up because of course they do because by the time you get to the end of the book, every single character that you're talking to and reading about in the book is now homosexuality. And I was going to say Joe Haldeman, William Mandela is the only heterosexual person.
Okay.
And so he writes this like gender, or not gender, he writes this sexual orientation flipped version of what it's like to be a soldier in an army with like Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yes.
Or what? No, that's more of a 1990s thing, isn't it?
Yes.
But either way, like it was illegal to be homosexual and be in the army or whatever it is. But now he's there as the only heterosexual person in a completely homosexual army.
Right.
And again, I don't think it works perfectly, but at least it's an interesting idea. Except one of the characters who's homosexual, George Wilson, or the director of the producer of the audiobook, said, okay, now do a gay voice for this. And it's sort of like, oh, hello. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you don't need to do that, because if everybody is homosexual, that means like...
Everybody is.
And they even
matter.
Say, oh, you know, I'm not dressed like this because I'm homosexual. It's just I like great fashion and this is the fashion now back home. And he's like, oh yeah, is that the fashion now back home? You know, whatever. Like, and I'm like, oh right, so this is like a book which is playing around with sexual orientation in a bit clumsy way, but like by a white American guy
in the 70s,
but who obviously, this is obviously something that touched him or obviously something that means something to him, because like it's obvious. I say obviously, I don't know, but it feels like he had conversations or saw how homosexual conscripted soldiers were in the Vietnam War and wanted to make that part of the book.
Yeah.
And again, he was flipping around. So again, the idea is interesting, mm-hmm. but it is like a book from the audiobook narration, the narration choices that they're making from 1999. You're like, these days, you'd be like, no, I wouldn't make that decision these days, would it? No, I wouldn't make that decision these days.
Yeah. So it's an interesting mix of a book that was published several times in different ways, then recorded for an audiobook in the 90s, at the end of the 90s. And
I think it's the version of the book which they didn't sort out all of the issues with the...
Right. So the later version that you talked about, the 2014 Kindle version,
I don't know.
Might then even be better now than that, what you just listened to.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, like the 1997. Yeah, but if this was published in 1997 and the audiobook is from 1999, I'm guessing it's the 1997, which is the definitive with everything restored.
Yeah.
I don't know. Either way, from now on, I want to put all that aside just to say that I'm going to leave the 4 stars there from the earlier version.
The 2008 podcast. Yeah.
Podcast, but this version of the audiobook is only getting, this version that I'm reviewing now is like 2.5 stars.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think if I'd now reread the same version that I'd read back then, I might, it probably might have gotten 3 or 3.5 stars.
Okay.
I don't think it would have gotten 4 stars for other issues, which I'm going to go into now.
Yeah.
Which again made it difficult for me to enjoy it, but again it felt so dated that when you start reading a book, it's like, you know, when I reread Tarzan and I'm like, oh, Tarzan is a white supremacist who is like lynching black people or whatever it is, like that, you're like, oh, and the author of Tarzan was also a white supremacist who was like trying to set up, you know, white supremacist communities or wherever it was, and you're like, oh right, this is very interesting, but the book's still fun and interesting, you know what I mean, like, but it's once you understand the politics of the author, then it's difficult to not read the lynching scenes in the original Tarzan book and not be like, oh right, this is a lynching scene, you know,
right.
And you don't notice it, and you know the Disney remake doesn't have Tarzan lynching people,
of course not.
Anyway, where did I get into? Oh right, so dated books.
Yes,
it's still possible to read a book that's dated and still enjoy the book by like setting aside the datedness. I couldn't do that with this one.
Okay.
For reasons I'll get into. But at the time, it could have been possible to.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a bit of like sex adventures in this one as well.
Okay.
But the sex adventures is very much like 1970s, like late 60s. There's like the free love movement.
Yeah.
Everyone should love each other, but also everyone could just have sex with each other.
Yeah.
And free love is that, oh yeah, free love means that you as a person don't own me and I don't own you. And if I want to have sex with someone else, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's disconnected from marriage. It's disconnected from like partnership, ownership. And all of this free love sounded really, really great. In like a few months of like 1960, Summer of Love, if you know what I mean, that like, oh, Beatles, everyone's putting flowers in each other's hair.
Yeah.
And it's all like anti-war protest and free love. And then like cocaine arrived and then AIDS arrived, you know, like it got really bad for the free love. But mostly it got really bad because it was just like lots of men wanting to have sex with women.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Like, and this book is like, sex fantasy, like, you know, what do we call it? The penis adventures. Yeah, William Mandela penis adventures. And
okay.
With the idea about that it's like men and women signed up to have to conscripted equally.
Okay.
And then one way to keep them happy and pacify them is that they have this sort of like, oh yeah, anyone can sleep with anyone if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that kind of... So it's not really free love, because in the end, it's actually mentioned that this is by military custom and law that everyone should be able to have sex with anybody. And it seems like, from the point of view of the male author and the male main character, that this is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing.
Can we come to the question of consent here?
That's the thing. Free love doesn't feel very free if it is both expected and, in a way, compulsory by military tradition and law. Now, again, I know he's not being completely serious about this, but each individual like section of the book feels like a different idea, like a different satirical idea about war, being a soldier, anti-war. So this is kind of like thrown out there, and it's sort of like, And I bet, you know, and then we turned up and all these men over at this base, they hadn't had any women around. So what we had to do is that, like, the women that we had, they were turned loose on our women or something like that. And I'm just like, oof. And again, I understand that Joe Haldeman is writing, like, it's not meant to be, and this is the way it should be. He's writing a guy who is sort of like, and this is the way it is. Yes, of course it's the way it is. But it's difficult to enjoy somebody like writing like rape scenes. I'm not even sure, but like talking about how the women just got, it's just weird reading this thing from that point of view. It's difficult to get into. And again, I listened back to my previous review of it and I'm also like, that's a bit weird and stuff like that. Same with that like idea of like science fiction homosexuality, take everyone's a homosexuality in the future. Yeah. That's fine. I don't mind it. Ursula K. Le Guin is like, how about a race of people who are all, you know, who aren't male or female and they
can want change,
you know, they change.
Gender.
And, yeah. How about people who are like, how about a world where there's no men or like, you know, the James Tripp T. Jr. sort of like, what about if like all there's no men left on Earth, or maybe there's no women left on Earth, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what he's going for in this. But writing as a 30-something-year-old white male in 1974 America, it's like, ah, this is, there's a lots of assumptions here.
And lots of shortcomings of like, what would that actually be like for everyone? Not only for the guys.
No, it is talked about what it's like for everyone, like even for the women, but also it's like a, oh, I bet they're going to be sore in the morning kind of way.
If
you know what I mean? Like, I understand maybe what he's attempting to do, and I'm not going to knock him for it, but it's, this book does, in that way, this does not hold up at all. Anyway. Oh, and there's another kind of thing as well, that it's just like when they're back on Earth, I'm sort of like, yeah, and then I passed her a joint and we smoked a joint and then passed it back. And I'm like, oh, this is a very 70s story here. And again, this is mostly in that section where they're back on Earth and they're like, and have a joint and I'll have a joint. And I was like, what? Like, it's just like everything is so assumed to be the exactly as, even into, deep into the future, what the views are like of the people in the future are either 1974 views or kind of satires on 1974 views, or like this like gender or sexuality flipped views, or like, you know, sort of like, oh, what are the politics like now? You know what I mean? Like everything is like framed in that way, which I find fascinating. And this is, I mentioned a while ago that it like made me think about something.
Yeah.
That so much science fiction of this time, of the 1970s.
Yeah.
And this is why I'm saying, why aren't there other books from the 1970s or like late 60s, 1970s? Like, what is it about that? And I think it's the reason why I didn't enter any of these books into our must read list. And I think why it's so difficult to connect with these novels is because there's such a strong interest, like political interest, in this sort of like 1968, 1969, summer of 1970s, you know, moving on through, you know, all the way up to pretty much the start of the 80s, where what we think of as like the modern world is now, or what we can think, like when we look back at 70s, I don't know, there's like this cutoff line where we're like, oh yeah, people thought that hippies and free love was going to be a big thing and everyone was going to smoke weed and stuff. And now it's like, yeah, like there are people who do free love stuff, but they're like the weird swingers over there, or they're the I don't know what am I trying to say, like what it's kind of not looked down on, but we kind of recognize that isn't what everyone should be like. You know, everyone isn't going to be a hippie, everyone isn't going to be smoking joints. People will smoke joints and we can decriminalize it or legalize it or anything like that, but it's one of those issues that like young people think they're going to be into smoking weed and they might be, but it isn't actually, if available to everyone, everyone's going to take up on it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, oh, everyone can be homosexual. Okay, then like loads more people are going to become homosexual. Everyone's going to be like smoking joints. Everyone's going to be, if free love is available to anyone, everyone will do it and will take part, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's that straight, like it's a weird time in life that I read over and over and over again in science fiction, which is like this 1970s male obsession with free love and that it's the best thing ever. And of course, yeah, it is. It is. Like, free love sounds like the best thing ever. Yeah. It feels like it should be the best thing ever. Yeah. And you get lots of science fiction books about free love and about people, like naked people and, like, everyone's clothes disappearing and all that kind of stuff. And lots of nudity in movies and lots of, and but the hangover of that is all, like, the 1980s movies where we rewatch them and you're like, oh, why do you keep putting rape scenes in, like, you know, which now we would consider a, like, rape jokes and rape scenes and, like, super non-consensual kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And all of that that you had to kind of deal with now is kind of like this feels like, again, I'm not saying it is, but it feels like this hangover from this, like, free love, everyone smoking weed and, you know, sex available to everyone with no questions and isn't it great, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And again, as I say, other drugs came in, AIDS came in,
The 80s, or I'm now specifically thinking about movies from the 80s, feel so much like the outcome of that, as in what you said with, you know, just like, I'm not thinking with Philadelphia, like, or like, or like these really severe and serious AIDS and grief and and that all comes, and then we watched, what was it, this one movie, was it Die Hard or something, where the chief, the cap, police chief's daughter.
It was Lethal Weapon. And the second, was it, is it Danny Glover? I can't remember.
Yeah, well, I don't remember who is what, but I do remember that the police captain's
He just jokes about, and don't you rape my 16-year-old daughter. And you're like, whoa. Ooh. Yeah, anyway.
So this is all, like, these kind of mindsets only in the 80s could, like, it all happened because of the...
I'm not saying it all happened. What I'm saying is that society has now decided that free love isn't the answer to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that smoking weed isn't the answer to everything.
Yeah.
And the other things that are talked about in this book isn't the answer. Like, you can't just decide to be gay and in the future being gay, like, gayness isn't going to be a problem-solving thing for overpopulation. Like, these kind of things now as society and science fiction, it feels like it's decided that actually all the assumptions that were being made in the 1970s, that were informed by, like, the Cultural Revolution. The Cultural Revolution? What was it? No, that's not the wrong thing. That's the wrong word. What I'm trying to say. The sexual revolution. That's the word I'm saying.
Yeah.
The culture of sexual freedom and sexual liberation and sexual revolution and all that kind of stuff. It feels like everyone should just love each other. And by love each other, I mean have sex with each other.
Hmm.
Infuses 1970s science fiction, but it doesn't infuse 1980s science fiction or 1919 science fiction, because even by then they're like, ah, yeah, that was probably just a lot of people on drugs and now AIDS exists, so we've got to move back.
Yeah.
And it feels very, 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 very now the opposite of what it feels like in 2020s science fiction, where everything's informed by the world now as we know it, like Me Too movement and, you know, consent and everything that is, like, now you can just assume it's like the opposite of what the assumptions were in 1970.
Yeah. And I think what happens is, as well, if you are writing a book in the 70s, you're writing a book with the mindset of the 70s, but not with the consequences and with the outcome.
Yeah.
And so in the 80s, people had to then work with the outcome, with the consequences, and some bits trickled through, as in, you know, it is good to have a choice. It is good, like, women can have sex if they want to, but there needs to be consent. Like, it needed to be, like,
but also just balance, like, in a post-COVID world, we just know about, like we just have so many object lessons in, like, disease transfer, you know what I mean? There's just so much going on here. Like I say, not, I'm just talking about, like, biological stuff and physical stuff and science stuff and that kind of stuff. It's so much has moved on, let alone
we have more understanding
rights,
of things.
You know, understanding of stuff.
And now big movement that I see on the internet now is actually people saying, look, all medical research has always been done in the past on men, and we just don't know enough about women's health, and that is now,
there's science fiction to be written about that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, what I want to say is, my last note here is an interesting one,
okay,
which is, and I've mentioned this before so many times, like the current trend of science fiction, the current like vibes of science fiction is very, very noticeable.
Okay.
And they are, so much of it now is based on what we now assume is correct for our current time. Yeah. Now, I don't want to be cancelled or mentioning this. I'm just saying it's going to be interesting in 50 years' time.
Yeah.
Looking back at science fiction from now, that's written now.
Yeah.
And what are all the assumptions that are going to be underlining everything of our current science fiction and what it's exploring, which isn't going to be correct in the future or is going to be weird or dated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
There will be things. And I'm not saying anything is wrong about anything now, but it is a bit strange that like every science fiction, which is in this tall wave squeakcore style, has to have at least one character who uses different pronouns or is non-binary or whatever it is like that.
Yeah.
And it's going to be strange if in 50 years' time where we go, we thought that was going to be the case, but it isn't. This sounds sacrilege for me saying this now about this kind of topic, but this stuff is so strong in 1970 science fiction that it feels so dated. And now I'm not saying it's wrong, but it just feels weird to play around in that space. Because this is a white male, straight guy who's messing around in the space of free love and homosexuality.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if he's writing correct things about that, true things about that, untrue things about it. It's strange that that was just a free and open place for someone to write about all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Who's disconnected.
Yeah.
And now I'm thinking we're going to look back at this place that now of our time now, and we're going to be like, oh yeah, this person was, you know, non-binary and they wrote a book, or this person was trans and they wrote a book, and this person was gay or whatever it is. But then at the moment, the expected content of science fiction to be nominated for Hugo and Nebula Awards at the moment is there has to be something about gender in there.
Yeah.
And there are some people who are writing in 1974 about gender and, you know, interesting stuff about gender or whatever. And I'm saying James Tripty Jr., Ursula K. Le Guin, you know, there's other authors who are women. Let me just state it really obviously here. The women authors who you read about writing about these same topics at the time, you read it now and go, they were the right ones to be writing about this.
Yeah.
Joe Haldeman, probably not. I mean, good job for winning a Hugo and Nebula back then.
Yeah.
But now that's not. And in 50 years time, are we going to read the fiction that's now written by straight white men or straight white women who include these non-binary characters or trans characters or different pronoun-y characters? And in 1950, our attitudes of that will be so refined compared to they are now.
In 2050.
So what did I say?
1950.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean 1950. So yeah, I said 2050. I meant in 50 years' time, let's say.
Yeah.
So 2070, we're going to look back at 20 books from 2020 and go, wow, what they were writing there wasn't incorrect. It could have been good satire. It was a good exploration of a theme. It was good, like everything. I'm not saying it was incorrect. I'm just saying, but these were the wrong people who were writing about that. And this very tight group of people here, they obviously understood what they were writing about because, you know, they weren't the straight white people or whatever it's going to be. They weren't the male people writing about, you know, straight white guys writing about homosexual experience in the army.
I understand. However, and now I must make a little extra point, like an asterisk here.
Yeah.
I think that by a group that is accepted, large group that is accepted in society for certain things.
Yeah.
In our case, white people, male or female, it trickles down a little bit more like white female or American authors become more like they are widespread, like they're accepted. And it feels like if certain topics reach their way up to certain demographics, these kind of topics can get in the wider society can latch on.
Yeah, yeah.
And then those ideas later on in 30, 40 years and 50 years, they can then be accepted as the norm. And it's not just
except that smoking joints is by default and free love by default. isn't now the norm. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that it's not going to be that way for like gender stuff and non-binary stuff. I'm just saying that like, what are the, well, I'm just using that as an example of like, who are the people who should be writing about
sure,
this?
Sure, yeah. But I'm saying is, of course, not everybody has to smoke weed. Or,
no,
like,
but what, at the no. moment, everybody has to include non-binary characters in their book to be nominated for Hugo Awards. That is what has to happen now.
I understand. Setting that aside.
Right.
Talking about the weed thing.
Yeah.
And in the 70s, everybody was smoking weed like crazy, whatever. But now, for example, in Germany, they just start slowly taking away the very strict laws on certain things. Mm-hmm. And then you have a choice. It's always about having the choice to, yeah. you can make an informed choice for yourself. Yeah. And so some bits trickle through and then they become like accepted.
Yeah, what I'm saying about the weed smoking was an example of, it was just dropped into a sentence that after they met up and had sex, they were just smoking a joint together. She passed me a joint and I lit it up and we started smoking a joint. And then it just moved on with the story and it was like never mentioned again until like, you know, later on in that section of the book, we're like, we had another joint and then we moved on. And you're like, and then you go back into space for another 20 years or 6 months and there's like, were you smoking joints in space? Like,
probably in the 70s, but everybody smoked everything.
They
everywhere.
Couldn't have been, because I'm just saying, like I say, it's just one of those things where the assumption was so strong that it just kind of like bonked me in the side of the head and then they just move on with it. And I'm like, ah, right. Yes. In 1974, you could write about all these topics. You could talk about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't weird to talk about that.
Yeah.
Now, the way that he's writing about free love, like compulsory free love, is weird. Yeah. The way that he's talking about like what it's like to be the only heterosexual in the village is weird. You know, again, I'm looking, what I'm trying to say is, the question I'm asking is, what are the things that now we read about, which we think are going to be base assumptions in the future, that it's fine for everyone to be writing about, which are going to be so dated, because in 50 years' time, we're going to be like, ah, now we actually understand the issues. Now we actually understand the situation. You know,
there will never be that point. We will never be able to know what the thought of, oh, this is correct, this is right, the future will be.
No, that's what I'm saying.
And also,
in that case, it's relative, because at the time, every science fiction author was writing with assumptions about free love and that everyone's going to have sex with everyone.
Yeah.
Like, it was these books, like this book and like Stranger in a Strange Land, are like foundational books now in science fiction and were for a long time. Mm. Like, all of these books which I read as a kid where, you know, people just have in science fiction just having sex with each other and all that kind of stuff. It's like, I know this because the books that I was reading in the 90s, which were all like books from the 1970s, they're all like this.
Yes.
And that's what makes them feel dated.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But the books from the earlier 1960s, before the Summer of Love and all this free love movement really kicked off in gear, within science fiction, those books I read again, and it's not like I read a Philip K. Dick book and like everyone's having sex with everyone. It's not that, you know, and like the Ursula K. Le Guin Left Hand of Darkness. It's like that there are interesting ideas in, but because it was written in 1969, the stuff that was around in 1974, or that was assumed in 1974, different set of assumptions in 1969.
Yeah.
Or for novels that were written in 1967, 1968, published in 1969.
Yeah, because books that literally have stood the test of time were books that people would read.
Yeah.
So if you have a book that didn't do well, nobody would remember that
book. But that's the thing. I reread Moby Dick and everyone's like, this book was ahead of its time. It's like, yeah, back then it was a shit novel, but now it was an unsuccessful novel, let me put it that way. But sometimes it changes and what was weird back then is now more accepted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the homosexual love story, the meet cute in Moby Dick, now I thought was really delightful and really interesting, but I totally understand that like whenever that was published
at the time,
in like 1890, I don't even remember what date it was,
but
like when these books were like a homosexual love story at the start, it's now I'm like, yeah, Moby Dick, great, good, well done for positive depictions of a homosexual love story relationship. But for many, many decades, that wasn't what, if you thought about Moby Dick, that wasn't what you were thinking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when I read the start of Moby Dick, that's all I could think about. I was like, this is great. Get me more of Queequeg.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So you still,
just to finish up that whole point, please don't cancel me. I'm just doing a thought experiment of all the social assumptions in a 5-year period from like 1972 to 1978 or whatever, you know, whatever it's going to be, that 6 year, what were the assumptions? And I'm just saying it feels like there are many assumptions that we keep reading about in these Tor Wave, Squee Core, and all of the other science fiction at the moment, which... that's, I think, going to be the thing that dates this period the most.
Okay.
And I'm not saying it's good or bad. There's some assumptions which are very strong and very good and stand the test of time. And there's others which don't. And just thought I'd mention that. Please don't cancel me. It's just a thought experiment.
I'm thinking at the moment, this is all about visibility and people just being aware that other things exist.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I think, sure, like sometimes you can have a bit too much of a, like a, give me the bucket.
Yeah.
And this is a bit how this period of science fiction feels at the moment. Like it's so full with this stuff because it's at the moment, this is what people decided on that is necessary.
Well, it's what sells.
Exactly.
What sells, what becomes popular, what wins award. And there's definitely a cycle. Yeah. After all, the sad puppies were defeated by the Hugos or whatever it is. It's like, you know.
Yeah, the pendulum is swung to completely
it's a swing of a pendulum.
And this is to totally something to observe and say, okay, this is where we are now.
But it feels like the course of the Science Fiction Book Review podcast has kind of been accidentally documenting this kind of stuff about like why are all these things, it's the same with the Wizards versus Lesbians Who podcast, which is even more focused onto specific books with specific themes in the subgenre, science fiction subgenre.
I want to just come back to your rating of this book. So you said you're now with the book you just listened to from the 1999 audiobook version on Audible, you would give it 2.5 stars.
2.5 stars.
Okay.
But that...
It felt a bit like it would be closer to 2 or 1.5 than 2.5.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Now what am I doing? Am I rating the book that I just read, or am I rating how much I enjoyed reading it last time, and then each time one of those good ideas came up, or one of the interesting ideas or quirky ideas came up, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a fun idea.
Yes.
Because I listened back to that previous podcast. It was me talking... for 20 minutes in 2008. And it's all about the ideas. And this idea is good. And this idea is good. This idea is weird. This idea is dated.
So here's now my question. Did you write down your rating for this book before or after you listened back to the 2008 podcast?
Here's the thing. I couldn't do that.
Okay.
Because I was so confused about how much less I enjoyed this book this time. Do you understand?
You thought like, is it me or is it the
book? Yeah, sort of like, have I changed so much that in 2008 I was satisfied by this 2-star or 2.5-star book, that I was so satisfied with it that like how much greater is my sense of taste now? How many more good books have I read? How much more classic science fiction? How much more science fiction from the 60s and 70s and 80s have I read now? How much? And I thought I had changed so much. But when I listened back, I had the same issues with this book.
Yeah.
Like most of the same, as far as I could tell, again, it's a much shorter, and not a conversation. It's me just sitting in my camper van by myself talking into my laptop or whatever. But yeah, like I had some of the same issues, but then ideas-wise, but then structure-wise and pacing-wise and story-wise and character-wise, this book is genuinely worse by having more stuff in it.
Yeah.
You know, by expanding it out, it makes it such more of a worse book. Yeah, 2 stars. Let's give it 2 stars.
Okay.
Honestly, but again, the shorter version of the book might still be a 3.5-star book, again knocked down a bit because it's dated, but left good because it's a brisk read, which is full of interesting ideas.
Yeah.
And like it being edited by the person who was editing the original short stories and edited the novel together, is probably that editor did a good job of making Joe Haldeman's complete works in the, or not complete works, but all of the short stories or all of the novellas that he'd written. The editor did a better job. The 1975 editor did a better job of making a fun, brisk, ideas-based novel.
Yeah.
You know.
By chopping out parts of like novella.
The first
bits.
Time I read it, didn't even know it was a fix-up novel. I didn't even know it was short stories combined.
No, of course
I
not.
Just, you know,
it wouldn't say in a cheap little paperback.
No,
thing.
You just read it, and that was before. Was it even before? When did 19? Like this is 2008. This is might have even been before like Wikipedia was a thing that you were just. No, it wasn't actually. No, because I remember at the start of the podcast for every episode of the SFBRP, I would go and add it to external links. You see this external links thing here?
Yeah.
I would put the Science Fiction Book Review podcast episode about
on
this.
The Wikipedia page.
Oh, yeah, I'd add it. And back then. Fuck it, just did it. And for a lot of my early listeners, based on emails that they got, came to the website via me just adding links to the Science Fiction Book Review podcast to the bottoms of Wikipedia pages that I've read.
Oh, that's cute.
Maybe some of them are still there. I doubt it.
But, yeah.
Yo, actually, let me just do a quick thing. Here we go. Episode
that's
list.
Funny.
First, I'm going to pick Outcasts of Heaven's Belt and Venus of Dreams. These are Door into Summer. And Diamond Dogs Turquoise Days, just because these are probably less updated books. External links, not on that one. External links, no. I think someone probably went through and removed all these external links to random. It's all just Internet Speculative Fiction Database, the Open Library and Internet Archive.
Yeah.
Yeah. These. See also, yeah, so obviously all of my added links. So I do remember Wikipedia was a thing, but maybe not as much stuff on there.
That reminds me so much of me reading Ringworld in German as a little paperback version. And we figured out, I just read an abridged version.
No, it was Dune.
Or was it Dune? Oh, yeah, it was Dune. Yeah, that was it. It was
maybe
just completely different.
But again,
different.
I don't consider this the version that I must have read in 2008 as an abridged version.
No.
The version that won the Hugo's and Nebula Awards was the version which was shorter. The later definitive version is the, you know, not the theatrical cut. It's the, you know, it's the extended edition and then the director's, director's cut or whatever it is.
And they're not always good. They're
not always
the best. Longer.
They're always longer. And that can introduce other issues.
Yes.
Right. That's it. Please don't cancel me. I'm just doing.
No.
Look, I'm just want to say it because people get on, you know, people take it the wrong way and things like that.
I don't think you said anything that.
Yeah, but I always feel it because because if I mention like pronouns and that I don't like they as a pronoun because it's confusing, people think that I'm attacking like non-binary people, and that's not the case. It's bad writers. It always comes down to this: it's people who aren't good enough at writing with first with singular theys. You know, they make the books confusing.
Yeah,
they
but
make
you
the
didn't even
confused.
Mention that until now.
No, I'm just saying. But like, I'm just saying, it's a similar kind of thing. What I am concerned about with the, to be really clear, I'm concerned that the wrong people are writing novels with binary, like non-binary characters and trans characters and all like whatever these characters are with different pronouns. I'm just concerned that it's the wrong people writing these novels.
Yeah.
Like the way that they're playing around with depictions of other people's sexuality and
livelihoods
lifestyles and livelihoods and gender identities and non-gender identities and asexual identities and sexual, whatever it is. I'm just sometimes a little bit concerned that it's not all that I'm getting people playing in space which doesn't belong to them, in the same way that I feel like Joe Haldeman kind of playing in a space which doesn't belong to him.
Yeah.
But he's in the cultural milieu at the time, mm-hmm, which is free love and whatever. We're talking about this now, isn't it? It reminds me of that documentary that we watched about what's the comedian who's in Only Murders in the Building, the main guy,
Martin, Steve Martin.
And he was like, yeah, and in the 1970s I dressed up and I grew my hair long and was a hippie and like made jokes about smoking dope and wore this colorful stuff, and they sort of like, oh, and then I put my, and then I wore a suit again and my hair turned gray and I cut it short and suddenly I was massively successful, because everyone was like, you're not a hippie, stop trying to be a hippie, stop like going out there with like a guitar over your, you know, shoulder, play your banjo and do whatever, you know, like be you, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And that's the same kind of period, like the 70s, where you're like, oh no, I have to smoke, you know, I have, mm-hmm, to smoke joints and, mm-hmm, I have to talk about this and I have to be weird and stuff. It's like, no, just be you. Like,
yes.
And once he was him...
Be you and allow other people to be themselves.
Yes. And anyway, I don't know why I brought that up. Yes, yeah. That I say, the cultural milieu of the 1970s infected science fiction so much that it's going to be difficult for me to now find one of these masterworks novels. Mm-hmm. I probably will find it, but it's probably not going to be, you know, Gateway or Forever, The Forever War, or other white American authors writing at the time. Mm-hmm. Those are going to be difficult. They won't stand up as strong.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be based on lots of assumptions, which we now have opposite assumptions in the current world.
Yeah, true.
So yeah, that's all I want to say.
So 2 stars.
Let's give this 2 stars this side. However, maybe 4 stars for the other version. Like for the, but that's still, I don't think 4 stars is enough for this. So here's the real rating now isn't, is it a 4-star book? Is it 2.5-star book? Is it a 2-star book? Is, will this be edited? Will this be added into the SFBRP must read science fiction list?
And the verdict is?
No, because I can't guarantee that people are going to read the correct version,
yes,
which is the 1974, what's now called the abridged novel version.
Yeah.
I think if you did read that, and it's sort of like, this is from 1974,
yeah,
and this is the book that won the Hugo and Nebula, and you can definitely be sure about that, I would recommend people read it. Despite it being dated, it's kind of dated in an interesting way.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
And because it's like satire based in its time, or it
but
feels more
be
satirical.
Aware.
Yeah, yeah. But be really aware going into this book that it might be a 300-page book instead of a 200-page book.
Mm-hmm.
The pacing might be bad. It might be edited together badly, and also just now not a very good book. 2 stars.
And that includes the audiobook that's on the free library at Audible.
Maybe that's why it's a in the free library.
Probably.
Who knows?
All right.
That's it.
Cool.
You can email me, Luke. Oh, we've gone 1 hour and 10 minutes. Okay,
yeah.
You can email me. I'm luke@juggler.net. I listened back to that 2008 podcast. I'm like, hey, if there's anything you don't like about the podcast, get in touch with me. If you think it's too long or too short, or you want me to cover other stuff. If you don't like the podcast, email me. Weird. Don't know. You can become our friends on Goodreads. Oh, that's the other thing. I read through a few people's reviews on Goodreads. Loads of, typically 4 and 5 stars. This is super highly rated on Goodreads.
Okay. But that really depends on the version you've read.
Maybe, or it depends when you read it. You know
maybe,
what I mean? But
yeah.
4.14 stars over on average on Goodreads. And it doesn't show you the average of your followers. But like Kemper, 5 stars. Kevin, 5 stars. Ulysses, 5 stars. Carol, 5 stars. Klotz, Die, lots of them. But there are a few 3 and 2 star books as well. And I sorted the community ratings by 2 stars.
Mm.
And it's funny they had the same thing. I understand some parts of the book are there to show us the main characters and old-fashioned compared to others. But oh my, was this a frustrating read? She said, this is Emily. Emily, Books with Emily with Emily Fox on YouTube. So I guess Emily Fox says, they then unleash Stargate's 18 sex-starved men on a woman, compliant and promiscuous by military custom and law, but desiring nothing so much as sleep. So in other words, it's a scene where 18 men get access to women who just want to have a rest and get sleep. But by military custom and law, they then have to have sex. So again, it's like... This is a classic example of Joe Haldeman is writing about a bad situation for women, knowing it's bad, knowing that they don't want to have sex with 18 sex-starved men, that they would rather sleep, but saying in kind of a too flippant and too like off-the-cuff writing style that, oh, by military custom and law, they, you know, everyone gets to have sex with them if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when you come to it from the point of view is like it's unenjoyable despite that it's joke, because it's he's the wrong author to be writing about that topic.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Also, a woman would have worded that.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Wrong.
A woman
completely different.
Would not have written the sentence that way, even if the same beat in the story is... The women, like
have
the sex stars men, because
everybody has to.
Well, no, it's not that they have to. Is that the ship that they are on, there's an equal number of men and women. So everyone decides if they're going to shack up with someone that night.
Yeah.
Like, do you want to bunk with me tonight? Is just part of normal conversation.
Mm.
So it works on that. But then this is like this throwaway. Oh, but these guys haven't had sex for ages. All right. And then it's like moving on with the story and you're like, whoa, back up a bit there as well. So,
yeah.
So other people Other people had fewer than 4 stars, mm-hmm. 2 stars and stuff like that. So
okay.
And that's why I read the 2-star reviews, because I thought mine was going to be about 2 stars. So if I have a star rating in my brain, I like to read other people's ratings of the similar star rating just to make sure.
It's like,
am I the only person who has issues? Yeah. So again, while the book is dated, it's also less enjoyable to read because of that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's it from us. You can give us feedback on the SFBRP listener group, books you'd like to see reviewed. Next up, maybe The Sparrow, maybe a different book.
It's going to be a bit difficult because you're going on an extended work
trip. Either
way,
I'm going away. Like, we were doing lots of stuff over the summer for 4 weeks. We took holidays for many weeks over the summer. Like, it was pretty much 5 weeks over the summer.
You had 5 weeks. Yeah. I had 3 weeks.
Yeah, Juliana had 3 weeks. But there's 5 weeks where our schedule was messed up. This week, a podcast. And then I'm going away for another like 4.5 weeks or something. Mm-hmm. So maybe no podcast for a month, but more podcasts when I get home and when Juliana finishes The Sparrow.
I will have finished it by then for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I will reread it as well. Otherwise, yeah, another book that I have is the Those Beyond the Wall, which is the follow-up book to The Space Between Worlds, which was on the SFBRP must-read list.
Yes.
And I've got some other books as well sitting here. The Time Machine, The Terminal World by Alice Reynolds. And I've got 2 more credits available on Audible, so I'll be spending those as well.
All right. That's it.
What?
That's it.
I keep saying that's it. That is it.
Yeah. All right.
At the end of the episode in 2008, the introduction is pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Word for word, except I messed it up or whatever.
Okay.
But at the end I said, and I'll catch you later. So I was still doing the catch, like, because I'm a juggler, catch you. But I said, catch you later. And I'm like, no, it's catch you next time. It's not catch you later. And I'm like, annoyed with me that I hadn't established my the sign-off.
The outro yet.
2008. Been doing this podcast a long time.
Yeah. You have. I haven't since 2008.
But the reason I keep saying that's it from us is because that's like the beginning of the sign-off line.
Yeah.
But what I do is I say it and then think of something else to do, because it's sort of like I start signing off and then remember. Oh,
5 minutes ago, you looked at this and said, oh, this podcast has been going on for 1 hour and 10 minutes. And now it's 1 hour and 15 minutes. And we're still talking. Okay, that's it.
We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.